For a lot of us, there's a disconnect between what we eat and where it comes from. Kids who spend time in the garden are a lot more likely to make that connection. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Linda Knave of ISU Extension and Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens will be here. We'll talk about getting kids involved in gardening. And of course, Linda and Aaron will answer your questions. It's also our fall membership drive. If you are a fan of Hort Day, it's a great time to make your investment in Iowa Public Radio. Give at iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today. And with me today, Linda Knave, Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value-Added Agriculture Program. Hello, Linda.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And we miss Richard, but, you know, I think we'll be able to get along, and he needs a break now and then.
Absolutely. It's a well-deserved vacation. Aaron Style is also here. He's Education Coordinator at Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. It's a beautiful day outside.
It is. We've had a wonderful, wonderful fall so far. And of course, as this hour goes on, Aaron and Linda will be answering your questions. You can get on the line right now at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start the hour, though, talking about getting kids into the garden. And that's something that we've talked about quite a lot on Horticulture Day in the past. And Aaron, I know that with Ryman Gardens, you do a lot of educating. You get a lot of classes that come through, a lot of kids visiting. What can you show them when they visit a garden that can help them understand the growth cycle and bring them a little closer to our food sources?
I think it's just being out in the garden. I think when you really look at your day, so little of it is actually spent outside. And the same is true for our kids. And so taking those kids outside and having them interact with the garden, we had a program this summer where we had kids actually plant and maintain a small vegetable garden in our children's garden. And those kids really enjoyed all of that, the work that they were doing in those gardens, because they planted those vegetables and they harvested those vegetables. And let me tell you, they all tried those vegetables too. I had kids eating beets. I had kids eating radishes, and these are not plants that they would normally just pick up, but because they were involved with it, they wanted to try it, and it was just wonderful to see that.
Research studies have actually shown that kids are more likely to eat vegetables if they have grown them, and it just makes good common sense, but it's been documented, and I truly believe that as well.
Well, and we've talked a lot in the past about school gardens, which of course are a really big challenge in Iowa because the growing season does not coincide with the school year in many ways. And a lot of us also, of course, try to get our kids involved in home gardens. Linda, are there particular plants that seem to be especially kid-friendly, that are easy to care for and have a good payoff that kids can really stay with and enjoy?
Well, one of the things that we recommend when growing and growing a garden with children is get a combination of things, particularly things that they like to eat. However, we like to emphasize using and growing radishes, because in 28 days from seed to harvest, and there's not many things you can do that with. The other things that I like to recommend are things that they can almost pick from the garden and pop in their mouth. Things like cherry and grape tomatoes, sugar snap peas, peas in general. These things that they see, they can find, they can eat right straight from the garden.
Well, it makes it more likely that they'll actually eat vegetables, which is exciting. Linda, what else do they get from that experience, do you think?
Well, I think they build up self-confidence. There are a lot of things within the garden that, not just the physical, growing the garden, they get the exercise and they get the good vegetables from it. But I think the fact that they are actually nurturing something, and rather than being the one that's being nurtured, gives them great self-esteem, gives them pride, these kind of things that you really, it's difficult to measure, but it's there. And children get to know where their food comes from. I think one of the things we have today going on is that kids, rural and urban children, don't really know how food grows, whether it grows above the ground or below the ground, or whether it's grown on a farm, a ranch, or a garden. For example, one of the teachers, when we were out and around the state teaching growing in the garden curriculum, a 4-H curriculum written here at Iowa State University through the 4-H program, we were going teaching and training teachers on how to teach about gardening in the schools. And one of the teachers said, her student, they asked where eggs come from. And the student replied, cows. And the teacher sat back a little bit and said, well, why do you think eggs come from cows? Well, when you go to the grocery store, the eggs and the milk are in the same section, so that's probably why they come from cows.
Wow.
That was their logic. And, you know, I could see where that'd come from. And sometimes you can buy egg products in a little milk carton, so that's even more confusing.
Well, Erin, in getting kids to come to Ryman Gardens and in participate in the program, did you find that there were some tasks that were more kid-friendly than other tasks?
You know, harvesting is one of the most kid-friendly things, and it's one of the most rewarding things. And so we often had them work on harvesting tomatoes, harvesting radishes. There is nothing more fun than watching a kid dig up a hill of potatoes, because what comes up out of the ground are potatoes, and you don't see them, and all of a sudden there's this huge pile of potatoes sitting there. And many kids don't even realize that they grow underground. And so I think harvesting is one of the easiest things to do with kids, and is the most rewarding as well.
Of course, there are a lot of things that you have to do before harvesting. Does anybody have a good hint as to how to get kids excited about weeding?
You know, that was one of the things we went through, too. And, you know, with any weeding thing, there's a little bit of education. You can make it a lot of fun, because what is a weed, really, but just an unwanted plant? Well, how do you know which ones are unwanted? And so teaching kids what these plants look like and really making kids own the garden and the plants that are in it, suddenly it makes weeding more of a priority, because it's important, and it's something that if they want to take care of these plants, they need to weed and water. And how do you do that? Well, you get in there and you pull out the stuff that's not supposed to be there. And there's a lot of satisfaction with that, because there's instant gratification in weeding. That's one of the things that I love about weeding and mowing the lawn. Right away, you have something that you can be proud of and is finished and you can see. And so in that sense, too, kids can enjoy it that way.
Now, of course, we have a lot of other foods that we eat that come from other places, not just our gardens. Linda, you were talking a little bit about that earlier. And this is a time of year when we actually have an opportunity to visit quite a few farms around the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. We do. And it's a great business right now. And there's more rural areas that are getting involved in this. And it's called agritourism. Tourism in the spec that you're inviting guests and tourists out to your farm. And it's agricultural related, whether it be a pumpkin patch, a corn maze, an apple orchard. These things the children love. They love to go visit the farm, pick their own apple. They'll eat their own apple if they pick it, pick out their pumpkin. Good opportunity to meet the farmer who grew that particular crop. So there's a lot of things going on in that realm, and it's easy to find a farm near you. There's a website. It's easy to remember, visitiowafarms.org. And what you can do is plug in your location, and they will come up with a location for the nearest agritourism event or an activity for your area. Also, if you are in the agritourism business, you can register your farm for free on that website. Iowa Market Maker is another website that does have listings for agritourism and their hours and the things that they specialize in. So all of these things are available. And no matter where you live in Iowa, my guess is there's something for you within a 30-mile radius.
All right. Well, I do want to turn to the phones and get to answering questions. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here with me today, Linda Nave of ISU Extension and Erin Style of Ryman Gardens. And Tom is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Charity. I wasn't paying attention to who you were going to have on, so I don't have a gardening question. Is that okay?
If it's about plants, I think we can talk about
it. Yeah, it is. It is. I've got a kind of an ivy ground cover, I guess that's what you'd call it. And I've had, it's beautiful. It grows like a weed, but it's gorgeous. And I was wondering when to take cuttings and give them to people so they can start it in their yard. What time of year?
Well, actually, depending on what kind of ivy it is, there's a different couple different ways you could do that. You could take a cutting, and best off is new growth, new lush green growth in the spring or summer. That's new vegetative growth. Once it starts getting a little woody stem, it's more difficult to root. And if it's like an English ivy, you can root that in perlite, you can root that in water, and it roots very effectively if it's not too over old wood. And that's in one route. And many ground covers, like ivies and other things, will produce adventitious roots, which means that the nodes, they will develop a root that goes down the ground. That's how they spread. So by finding where that slip or that segment of the plant is rooted in the soil, you can dig that section up without damaging the rest of your plant and just have it already rooted and potted up.
All right. Tom, thank you so much for your call. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100 or send your gardening or yard questions to our email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Casey's up next in Iowa City. Hi, Casey.
Hello. I have heritage red raspberries that I have. I've been growing them quite a long time, but this year in particular, and actually some other years too, they break off into little segments instead of the whole berry.
Okay. The raspberry itself is made up, the fruit is made up of little drupelets.
Yes.
And it could, I'm not particularly well-versed in why they would be breaking apart like that. It could be a water-related issue. Heritage is a variety of raspberries that are fall-bearing, where most, they produce fruit on primacanes. You can have them on the old canes or the new canes, which many raspberries are just July-bearing or on the old canes. So that's what makes heritage very desirable, because you can get a longer season out of them. But the drupelets are made up of a lot of different little fruits on one little berry. So by falling apart, they're separating each little fruit on its own. What would cause that? Could be temperature, could be water related. Has it just started this fall when the temperatures have been fluctuating?
You know, what's really interesting is that my golden raspberries are just fine,
mm-hmm.
that are very close, but the red ones are, falling
apart.
They're crumbling, yes.
And some varieties tend to be more crumbly than others. Heritage may be one of those, although I don't have experience with that. Autumn Bliss is an excellent one as well for fall production, so it could just be a varietal response to.
All right.
Sorry I couldn't be more definitive on that, but.
Well, I hope they taste good, even if they're falling apart. Maybe they're perfect for jam, maybe. Casey, thank you so much for your call. Next, we'll go to Diane in Davenport. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Hi, morning. What's your question?
Well, I have some beautiful dahlias for the first time this year, and I know they're supposed to be stored, so I have to dig them up. What part do I cut off exactly, and how do I store them?
Well, what would be best is to let the foliage die back a little bit. Usually after the first light frost, it does that. You'll dig them up, and you'll find this really kind of elongated, fleshy, tuberous root in the ground, and that's what you're going to be saving. Anything that's dry or dead on that root, you can prune off, and then you want to store it. There's a couple different options for storing it that some people use, and a lot of times it takes a little bit of trial and error to find the exact perfect spot in your house and kind of the exact method. You want to clean off those tubers as well as you can, but don't wash them off. You want to brush off most of the soil, and then store them in a dry, cool, dark location, ideally around 50 degrees, maybe as low as 45, but not much cooler than that. And you'll want to check on them You can store them in a paper bag. You can store them in a crate with maybe a little bit of loose paper or something like that. What you'll want to do then is periodically throughout the winter, check on them, make sure they're not getting too cold, and make sure they're not drying and shriveling up. If they're drying and shriveling up, your conditions are too dry. If they're soft and mushy, your conditions are too wet. And so that's where the kind of playing around with it, sometimes finding the perfect spot is important.
All right, Diane, thank you so much for your call. And we'll get back to your calls and questions in just a few minutes. Ciela in Fairfield, hang on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we get back. You can also get in line by calling 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Aaron Stile, Education Coordinator at Ryman Gardens, and Linda Knave of Iowa State University Extension. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we will get back to answering your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Linda Knave, Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Aaron Stile, Education Coordinator at Ryman Gardens. And Ciela, I promised you'd be on the air when we got back. Ciela in Fairfield, hi.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I just want to say first that I'm a sustaining member.
Awesome, thank you.
Okay. I have 15 beautiful lilac trees. They're bushes, but they've turned into trees. They're so big, and I've had them for so many years. And one of the things I noticed is that when I take a flower off to put in the house or to give a friend, something happens to that branch, and I've been told that when you cut them or take them off, they don't regrow. And I notice now that most of the bushes that are around the front that I give people cuttings off of or, you know, put them in the house for myself, that the bushes and trees are getting to the point where the next season there's whole areas and branches that aren't making flowers.
So how old is this plant, would you say? I mean, is it fairly established?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, some lilacs over time are not as floriferous, and a lot of times folks will go in and remove some of the older branches at the ground to help rejuvenate that plant because the newer wood will bloom better than the older wood. It will also help reduce the size of your plant, too, because often those largest branches are the biggest ones.
Yeah.
And so if the shrub is too big as it is and you're not getting very good flowering on it, I would suggest going in either late winter, and since it's not blooming very well anyway, going in late winter, early spring, and removing the biggest and maybe second biggest, depending on how big it is, branch right at the base.
Oh.
And help encourage that shrub to produce more branches at the base, and those newer branches will probably bloom better for you.
I see. And since they've gotten very tall, should I go with a ladder and take it down from the highest point as well? Like, in other words, really do a cut back of the whole thing for the season?
I would probably just remove the largest branch at the base of the plant and see what it looks like. Chances are that will reduce the height a lot.
Okay.
If you start going in, especially on a shrub like a lilac, and trimming from the top down, you start really kind of messing up the natural form of that plant, and you can get something that you may not be as happy with in terms of looks.
Uh-huh.
Another option, you know, if you do that, it sends up shoots, and it'll probably, if you cut it off, the buds below will send up some shoots, and then you'll need to go in and selectively select one of those shoots. And so the best way really is what Aaron said, is go down and take it from the bottom. Otherwise, you've got some rebuilding to do on that shrub.
I see. And those branches now that I've been collecting the flowers from for several years that really aren't producing, shall I cut those back?
You'll probably remove them when you remove that big branch at the base. They'll probably all be connected.
I see.
And you never take more than about a third of that plant out at one time because it's a real drain on the plant.
a third of the plant. Means if I take that big one from the middle at the bottom, will that? Do you think that'll be a third of the plant? Or
well, I don't know for sure without seeing it, but it's likely it will be a pretty large portion of the plant. And that's why I mentioned earlier you might want to take just one or two branches out. So if you take the first one out and it's about a quarter of the plant, maybe you can take the next biggest one out and that'll be it. Or if you take out that first one and it's a third of the plant, then you're done.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Good luck with that, Ciela.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks a lot for your call. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kathy's up next in New Hampton. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, we have an ash grove, and, you know, given the fact that it might not be sustainable with the bugs and stuff, we want to plant some extra trees, but I'm wondering, can it be done? Like, we have a friend who has acorns and walnuts. Can you actually turn those nuts into trees?
We're laughing because, yeah, that's what we're talking about with teaching kids about seeds and plants. Yes, you can. Aaron, you want to talk about the process?
You absolutely could. Most of those, especially acorns and walnuts, are probably going to require some pre-treatments. And specifically, a cold treatment, they'll have to go through the winter. And sometimes you have to scratch or scar the seed so that it'll take up water and then go through the winter. So I don't know off the top of my head what exactly is needed, but you might do a little bit of research to see with acorns, you know, the specific species, if you need to scratch it first, or it's called scarification. I think it's likely that you will. The only downfall to this, there's some really great things about this. One, it will be native stuff. It will be very well suited for that location if you're getting it from nearby. And two, there'll be good, strong, healthy plants that are planted correctly, but it will take a while. And that's the only downfall.
Actually, you just want to be like a little squirrel.
I was going to say, the squirrels do seem to do a pretty good job with all of that processing on our place, especially with the walnuts.
Yes.
So if you're going to do that, though, do you need to try to protect the area where you're growing seedlings outside? Do you want to grow them in pots so you can protect them? What can she do to make sure those little baby seedlings make it?
Well, what I would do is I'd wait till they come up next spring, and then I would protect it because those little seedlings are very vulnerable to deer, rabbits, and other things like that. So I would protect it with a hardware cloth mesh around it. So give it an opportunity to get a little bit larger and protect it from weeds, although some trees are fairly good competitors with weeds. If they're small, you'll set back the growth. So pamper it along a little bit. I would not pot it up in a pot. I would keep it directly in the soil. And then if you do need to move it, if it's not in the appropriate location, let's say you plant it in a corner of your garden and it starts to grow after a year or two, then you can move it. Don't wait till it gets so large that it's going to be a real burden to move, but I would keep it in the soil.
All right. And what time of year would you move it?
Spring, before it starts to leaf out.
All right. Kathy, do you think you've got all your questions answered?
I've got a good idea.
All right. Good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation. We've got a couple lines open for you right now at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And this is a question from Al in Ames. How and when should I begin the process for overwintering seed geraniums?
Seed geraniums. Well, we've got a couple processes that we use for that. Actually, there's three ways you could do that. Way number one is take a cutting off of your seed geranium that you currently have right now, root it, and that will become your stock plant from which you take cuttings throughout the winter months. Opportunity number two would be dig the plant and take it indoors. But inspect it carefully so you're not taking any hitchhikers along with you, any insects, whiteflies, bugs, aphids, anything like that that might come on board with it. So that's your second option. And then what intrigues a lot of people is the bare root storage method, in which you, in the fall, before the frost kills them, so it'd be anytime soon, watch the forecast so the frost doesn't kill them, is dig them up. Don't wash the roots off, but just let them dry, the soil dry off the roots. then hang them in your basement upside down. You'll prune the old flowers off, but you don't prune any of the vegetation off at this point. It'll fall off on its own, but hang it upside down in your basement in a dark, fairly coolest part of your basement that you can. And don't put it over carpet because it's going to shed the soil. It's going to shed the old leaves. Tie it up with a rubber band or something and just ignore it for a while. Just let it go through the winter. Now, it'll look pretty pathetic. Some of them, if you take 10 of them into your basement, you may have success with 6 out of the 10, but it's still kind of fun to do. Then next spring, take that, prune those old roots back so you have fleshy tissue. Prune the tops back. The leaves have already died off. Prune the tops back and then pot it up in a pot, in a container with good fresh potting soil. And it's amazing. And water it. Give it light. And those plants do come back to life.
And what is the benefit of doing it that way as opposed to buying new from the nursery every spring?
Well, you get what you want. Let's say you've bought this seed geranium that has the most intense orange red and you've never seen that before. And you don't know if you'd be able to find that again. That would be one way to do it. I mean, that's one reason you would want to do that.
Okay.
Typically, seed geraniums are relatively inexpensive if you're buying a few. But if you're going to be doing a lot of them, this might be the thing to do. But it's fun to do. And the last method I mentioned in the basement, it's something you could do that you don't have to water it all winter or care for it or see that it gets plenty of light. You just forget about it for a while.
All right, let's go to the phones. Sasha's on the line in Columbus Junction. Hi, Sasha.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My husband and I recently purchased a rural farm house at acreage, and we had to put a new septic tank in, and that caused a huge disruption in the yard area at the back of the house. So now we're left with this big area that's just kind of loose dirt, and it comes up on a rather steep bluff. I'm not really inclined to really formal landscaping. I kind of like wildflowers and that kind of thing. My question was, what can I do to prohibit that ground from kind of eroding away through the winter and the thaw when it comes in the spring? Is there something I can plant now to kind of take root, straw? What would you suggest that I do there?
Well, I think that, you know, there are a couple – if you wanted to venture into a few cover crops. There are maybe a few cover crops you could put down, but that isn't something I would just plant and jump into. You want to make sure that you educate yourself a little bit about their use. It would help with the erosion, however, things like winter rye. But we're very quickly coming up on the date that's too late to plant some of that stuff, and so it would be something you would want to do very soon if
this
you did
weekend.
Anything.
Sounds good, right?
Yeah. So I don't know if that will be a great option for you or not. I think the big thing is to get something in place to help. I mean, is it on a slope or is it relatively flat?
It's relatively flat, but then there's a pretty steep bluff and it's very loose, new dirt. So this last good rain we had, it really kind of gave me a heads up that that's really going to be washed away rather quickly if I don't do something about it now.
I would say I would look into some things to help control erosion. It could be as simple as some straw bales lined up on the low end of that to keep the soil from washing down in that area until you can do something with it in the spring. There are a couple other things you could maybe look into. It sounds like you don't want to do turf, that you want to do something else, right?
Yeah.
So I would do that. I would spend the winter educating yourselves on what maybe you can put in that space in terms of native prairie plants or something else, what you would like to see there, purchase that seed and be ready to go as soon as spring comes to get that stuff planted.
Great. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Sasha. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. We still have time for a couple more questions this hour. That number again, 866-780-9100. Mary Jo is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi.
Hi.
We had a huge peach crop this year and lost several big branches. Wondering when would be the best time to cut back the bigger, longer ones that still remain?
Spring is the best time to prune. You get a better idea on the structure of the tree because the leaves aren't blocking your view. And It's typically better for the plant, sends out the new shoots. And if you start pruning in the fall on some species, you could do a lot of damage because you're opening that wound up for cold temperature injury in the fall. And also, if we have a warm spell, you never know with this global change what we're going to be up for. But sometimes if you prune things a little late in the season, they might just sprout out new growth, and you don't want that. And peach tree probably will not do that, but I would wait till spring.
What do you recommend for how far back to cut? Be drastic on the ones that were really hanging low? Or
yes, peach trees in general are fairly short-lived trees. They're
right.
Rapid growers. If you happen to notice your peach tree this year, that new shoot that grew could have been 3 to 4 feet long.
Uh-huh.
Did you find that?
Our branches are incredibly long.
Yeah.
Compared to last year.
You can prune those back significantly because the tree likes to be pruned back and invigorated.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Love your show.
Oh,
thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mary Jo.
Mm-hmm.
And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Marianne is on the line next from Northwood. Hi, Marianne.
Yes.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have an apple tree. It's a Sweet 16, and the apples this year are all misshapen. And I see the leaves have spots on them. They're like little dots with a black thing in the center. And I had bought a peach tree, at a box store earlier this spring and planted it down in that area. And I see that has the same spots on the leaves. Now, I don't know if one came from the other or what, but the apples on the apple tree were just, they're not round at all anymore. They're just all gnarled and funny. Is it done with or?
Well, you're talking about two different issues. The foliage is probably infected with a fungal organism. And whether it's the same one on your peaches as your apples, I can't tell you that. I doubt it, but that's a fungal organism. But what's happening on your fruit to cause the misshapen fruit is something called apple maggot. The apple maggot is a fly, and the female fly will lay her eggs on the fruit. The maggot burrows in a little pinprick hole, but that little pinprick hole is enough to deform that fruit. And so that's why you get that little pinprick and the growth starts growing around it, or you have some kind of deformity. Now, if you cut that apple open at that point, you may see the entrance of that apple maggot larvae, or it may just have died, but the damage had already been done to cause the misshapen fruit.
So what is this going to be a problem next year? Or?
Possibly. What I would do is most likely, actually, what I would do is go out and pick up all the windfalls, get all of the apples out of there for this winter so you don't have them over winter, and get them immediately out of the garden, out of the lawn area. And most gardeners that really want to maintain a good, healthy apple tree with no pest issues have to spray. It's almost mandatory.
You have to spray a lot of times, like they say, or every couple weeks? Or
Typically, there is a schedule that you need to follow. It's every week, every 10 days after a rain. That's why a lot of gardeners will just leave it to the orchardist to grow their apples for them. But you do find a year, and some gardeners are reporting it this year, that they didn't have much insect damage on their fruit this year.
Yes, I've seen a lot of that. It was just a ridiculously low pest year in the Iowa City area, in the Cedar Falls area, and wonderful, wonderful crops. And, you know, our last caller was talking about having her peach tree branches come off. We've seen a lot of that kind of damage this year because the crops were so big, too.
Right. After last spring, if you recall the April of 2012, remember we got real warm very early, and then our fruit trees bloomed extremely early. Well, then along came a freeze, which happened around April 11th, April 12th of 2012. It's kind of a historic date. But anyway, that caused the fruit flowers to abort if they were set on, and the small fruits to fall off, leaving a void the entire year of apple crop. Well, the tree's natural reaction then is to produce more the following year, and we call it biennial bearing. And so this year we had a perfect situation where the trees did not bloom. We had a late spring. The trees did not bloom too early. The frost did not kill the blossoms, and we had an overabundance of fruit.
So let me ask you more about these fly things. I try to compost, but I don't think I do it the right way. Well, I know I don't. I have these barrels I put in, the peelings and things like that, along with, other things. Does that, and I notice I see I have a lot of flies, does that contribute to my problem with the apple tree?
No, it's a different species of fly that's attracted to your decomposing plant materials than what is after your apple fruit. It's
okay.
A different fly.
So the only way to avoid that, if I spray next year, then I might be okay?
You might, or you just chalk it up for one of those things, and then hopefully the year won't be bad next year. But the best thing to do is get rid of all your windfall apples.
So this fungal thing, is that going to come back?
Likely. Again, you don't want to have all those spent leaves on the ground, which will act as inoculum for next season's growth. So rake them up, get them out of the garden.
How far away do they need to be?
On the compost pile, in the trash bin, wherever you can dispose of them.
All right, so it doesn't matter if
the recycle
they have to be...
area for your city, yes. I don't know a certain distance you have to be
all
away,
right.
But you just don't want them right under the tree.
All right, sounds like a plan. Marianne, thank you so much for your call. And last call of the day, John is on the line in Beaverdale. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I dug up a little 2-inch starter out of my mom's yard of a smoke tree and brought it over to my yard in Beaverdale and planted it 10 years ago. It's done great until a 15-inch branch fell on it out of my sycamore tree in the backyard. And it smashed about half of it, and it tore the bark, where it broke off one of the primary branches, it tore the bark down to the ground almost. And I'm wondering if that'll heal up. Can I salvage that? Should I just cut it down at the base come spring and see what comes up?
That much damage on the branch is likely not going to seal off very well. And
okay. It
would probably be best. I'm assuming you have multiple branches coming up from the base for this plant.
Well,
or...
I trained it into two. Basically, it's a small tree that I pollard every year.
I would remove that branch that has a lot of damage to it. That large wound is just an opportunity for disease and insects to cause even more havoc.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
All right, John,
bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for your call. And Aaron Stile, thank you so much for being on the show today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Charity.
Aaron Stile is Education Coordinator at Ryman Gardens. Linda Nave, thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you.
Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. And, of course, as Linda mentioned earlier in the hour, there are a lot of value-added agriculture projects that you can visit this fall. And she mentioned the website, visitiowafarms.org, if you're looking for a farm to visit near you this fall. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns. You can listen to podcasts or listen online to Iowa Public Radio on our website, iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, email us anytime. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.